Anyway, yeah, so what we're doing is we're writing this, like, a couple of people we were talking in IRC about, you know, some things that happened in the Terran, in like recent Terran games, and we thought it would be cool to kind of write an article about that. So I've got a couple of them, and I'll just run them by you, and like, and like the interesting thing is like, is it viable in like, because we haven't seen these things before, are they like viable in a like high level game? And if not, then why would these players still do these kinds of things? So like, that's kind of the gist, like that's the kind of information I want from you. So the first thing is the kind of the use of fire bats that especially Ruby did versus Roro on Eye of the Storm. And do you remember that game? It was a long game.
I watched it, and I was just like, "Oh, this game's cool."
It was a good game, yeah.
I mean, I think. And are you talking primarily about the use of fire bats against Dark Swarm?
No, I'm talking about like what we saw Ruby do, and Buxer versus Killorn Tornado, sort of as well. Like Buxer used it in the mid game for like a raid on Killer's Third. That he couldn't defend with Swarm. So, like, what we're interested in is,
is this a good thing to do? Swarm era? Or it's like, after the Zerg player's gotten Swarm, or are you talking about beforehand? Or you just want me to talk about fire bats in general? Because I have all sorts of opinions. I just wanted to make sure I'm in focus.
Okay, well, the thing about fire bats is usually that you make them early game, because then the Zerg only has like Zerglings, but then they usually go off at instead of expansions or something, and then later they're effective on a Dark Swarm, but not so much versus Ultralisk, so we hardly see them in the late game, kind of, only if he's like very Zergling heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
But Ruby used his fire bats,
like Swarm, you know, like.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. But, like, yeah, I always Ruby used chat it. Delay, so.
but the thing is that Ruby used his fire bats like throughout the game. So, like, we're interested, like, is that a good thing to do? Like, is it a good thing to just always incorporate fire bats in your Medic Marine army?
Yeah, well, here are my thoughts on that. So, totally like you said, fire bats don't seem to have a lot of use past the early game, because it's just like the Zerglings, they seem to be good against. And even if your opponent doesn't have Ultralisks and they have Dark Swarm, even if they have like 4 or 5 Lurkers, they're just going to eat up the fire bats really, really, really fast. In general, though, if you start pressuring really hard in the mid game, like I actually have this Ruby vs. Roro game loaded up. If you start pressuring really hard in the mid game, suddenly Zerg's in a position where he only has Lurker's Lings and Dark Swarm. So in that case, if you have a lot of room to maneuver, you can use the fire bats as just little added bonuses to do a bit of extra damage in that phase of the game, right? To do a little bit of extra damage to those Zerglings. And especially because, really, from my point of view, Zerglings are what deal the real damage.
They're like double the damage of a Marine. And like even versus the Lurker, they do like the same damage as a Marine. So
yeah, and I mean, but at the same time though, that's a really, you know, key phase for Zerg. Just that like real fragile sort of defense. Like, oh god, I don't really have any, I don't really have any units. I only have these Lurkers and Zerglings. So you can actually use fire bats, I think, in that circumstance to kind of like bash Zerg down. And there's part of an assumption on Terran's part, which is I'm going to throw money at you. It's almost inefficient to like be having a whole bunch of fire bats getting under Dark Swarm, but really you don't have any other choice at that point. I think the real key thing to think about, though, is, for instance, in Boxer versus whatever that guy was, Killer. The reason Killer. Those fire bats ended up working so well is because in that phase where it's just Lurkers and Lings against Lurkers and Lings and Defilers against fire bats, if you can cut in between the main and the expansion, when you go to the expansion, you can stop, and then the Lurkers have to throw a swarm and burrow, and you can do a bunch of damage, and then you can back up. So in a sense, the only thing you end up fighting against is Swarm and Zerglings, because the Lurkers aren't mobile enough to constantly get in front of the fire bats. So I think for a lot of tactics like that, Firebats are really good, but I think just throwing in a few extra ones into your army, just like 3 or 4, is something that for some reason, as you pointed out, is like underused. I don't see a problem with it at all. And I really cannot in my life imagine a game where you say, man, if only I had 4 Marines instead of those 4 Firebats, I would have raped that guy. I mean, I just think the biggest key to note is that if you are doing this sort of Firebat thing, phasing them out after your opponent, or I should say de-emphasizing them after your opponent gets a whole bunch of Ultralisks is definitely going to be of great help. I mean, the main reason that you wouldn't get Firebats is you'd say, well, I'm having trouble controlling them against Lurkers because they just run in and die like a bunch of dumbasses. In that case, I would say develop better Firebat control. But yeah, use more Firebats.
That's the thing. Like, because they're melee, they need to be in the right position more so than Marines. But as pro gamers get better, they might have the APM and the kind of skill to pull off those kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, and in general, any sort of tactic that you do, like drops or just running towards an expansion the way Boxer did against Killer, the Firebats are going to be much more helpful than the Marines. I mean, you obviously need Marines in there, but if you just do a drop with like 3 Marines, 3 Firebats, and I guess 4 Marines, 3 Firebats, and a Medic, you can just keep running circles around your opponent's base, and he can't do anything. Again, assuming that he's in this phase where he still has Lurkers, Lings, and that other unit that's important. Defilers, yes, there we go.
Defilers.
Not quite functioning right now, but I think it's... I've probably recapped like 8 times, but I'm going to do it again. It's just in the phase where it's mainly Lurkers and Lings and Defilers that I see Firebats having a really huge use, especially in terms of tactics.
So can I ask you about this? Like, there's this window like where it's very effective. So is using Firebats and being aggressive and focus and is and forcing your opponent to keep making those Circlings and Lurkers, is that like a trick to make that window bigger?
Oh, absolutely. I actually think that any Terran player, that should be his mindset in every game, as a matter of fact, is I am going to keep... I need to pound my opponent down in the mid-game to force him to have a lower economy than he wants and to force him to be stuck with Zerglings, Lurkers, and Defilers and be unable to tech towards Ultralisks. I want to do that for as long as possible because that's where Terran's going to be doing a lot of expanding, where they're going to be able to control big portions of the map with mines. They're going to be able to up their vessel count. They're going to be able to do little tactics with dropships and this sort of thing. I think that's absolutely like the key for Terran in the mid-game is to like say make that window as big as possible.
So what's interesting about that is that it's not just something that only pro gamers can do because you need to aim for a tiny window, but it's even something that lower level players can do because you can use them to force that window. Is that sort of correct?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like, I mean, for instance, if you watch Flash versus Hoggle, Flash is just ripping Hoggle apart for a very long time, and though Flash doesn't end up using a lot of Firebats, you'll note that Hoggle had absolutely no chance to even get Ultralisks. He was just so pounded apart the entire game. And I think that's something that a lot of Terran players overlook, especially at lower levels. They just think, here's my first push. Oh, it didn't work. Here's my second push. Maybe that worked. Here's my third push. But really, after your first push comes out, you need to think, how am I going to reinforce the middle? And you just keep sending units out there.
Okay.
And as a result, if you can get good enough control, Firebats will be very awesome and useful in that stage.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to the next point, which is the quote-unquote unexpected wraiths. And like the prime example of that, I think, would be Fantasy versus Hoja on Match Point, where Fantasy...
Oh, yes.
You know that game. I think you did that in your daily show, didn't you, that game?
I think I mentioned it a couple times. But
okay,
that's
anyway, you know that game, and
mind a lot.
That's like...
Yeah,
definitely. And we saw it in Flash versus Kion as well, on Tornado. And to a lesser degree, Justin versus Kalman Outsider, but Outsider's kind of a Guardian map, Guardian favorite map, so that's not really.
Yeah.
That's not.
I think your analysis on that is spot on.
Like we've seen that before, I think. And the other thing is that C has been doing it in TVTs versus Up Magic and Lomo, where. The other guy starts out with Wraith, and when he fends that off, he jots down two starports of his own and moves out with, like, I don't know, like 4 or 6 Wraiths, like that. You tell me, like,
games as well.
Okay, like, so what's is it viable to, like, kind of in the in the early mid game to, like, because we've seen like 2-port Wraith, like the really early Wraith in TVC, but this is like a later stage in the game. Is it like, is, would that be viable? Like, that's the question, I guess.
Yeah, the way I would put it is that anytime you start doing these big deviations, like getting Wraiths to do something really aggressive, because, I mean, obviously you're not going to make a bunch of Wraiths and put them over your expansion and go, oh, I'm so fucking smart. You're going to be doing something real aggressive with them. The amount of damage that you do needs to offset the fact that you're not going for science vessels. So actually, I'm talking only about Terran versus Zerg for now. I'll do the Terran versus Terran in a minute.
Yeah, okay.
But what ends up happening is that if we just think for a second about normal Terran versus Zerg, after that, we go for that mid-game push that has, like, the vessel, the tank, all the medic marine, and then we get another starport and more barracks, and we start adding on more science vessels and more medic marine. If we go 3-port Wraith, all of a sudden, that delays us getting vessels, that delays us getting more medic marine, and our opponent is still going to get defilers really soon. So all of a sudden, we are against a Zerg player who has defilers, and we maybe have one science vessel, and maybe have some medic marine, but probably not too many. And that's like a really icky spot to be in as Terran. So the danger of doing this sort of play as Terran is that you look like you're doing all this damage, and you look like you're being really, really fancy, and then you just instantly lose. A great, great reference game of this sort of thing is Up Magic against Effort on Outsider. Up Magic did this really weird, like, Valkyrie mass Wraith combination and was, like, harassing the shit out of Effort all over side expansions. Yeah, he even, like, took out, like, I think all his drones, the expansion, maybe even killed the expansions. And then, I mean, I was even watching that game and I was kind of like, oh my goodness, how is Up Magic going to transition out of this? That's, like, always my big question. How do you stop doing that and start doing something normal? And everyone, you know, in the thread was like, oh my god, Up Magic, oh, he's so awesome, look at him, be so sexy. And then Effort just fucking waltzed in, didn't even have Swarm, I think, just like waltzed in with Lurkers and Hydras and just instantly won. And it was kind of like, oh, you know. So when I was watching that Flash versus Hoja game, it was really fun to watch, not only because Fantasy versus Hoja, not only because Fantasy was being really, really aggressive and doing all this cool fancy stuff, but because he actually managed to live past that transition period. So I would say that it's absolutely a viable strategy, but you need to think of it the same way you'd think of any harassment. Is this doing more damage than it costs? And can I transition out of it? Is it preventing me from doing something that I really need to do? In terms of Terran versus Terran, it's kind of funny. Whoa, because there was
Like, like, the way I analyzed that game, match point, is that the Zerg has, like, because the map's got, like, two sides with each 3 gas, so,
yeah,
and, like, the fourth gas is, like, really hard to get. It's, like, really, it's pretty impossible because they're, like, right next to your opponent's base, right in the middle of the map, that kind of thing. So as a Zerg, you really want to do some damage from those 3 gas. From those 3 gas expansions. So there is this kind of window where he gets out of Mutalisks and starts making Lurkers, and, like, that's the window where those Wraiths like flew out, and that forced Hoja to, you know, not morph his Hydralisks into Lurkers, but to keep those Hydralisks, which ended up being pretty ineffective versus the Wraiths because they weren't upgraded. And that way he stalled those lurkers so long that Hoja couldn't do damage from three base, and Fancy just sat his like huge M&M Vessel tank bull in the middle, and there was no way of Hoja, you know, even like trying to pressure that, like, and I think like that's important that you can find that window, because Flesh versus Hyun, he was kind of ahead. I think he just killed Hyun's third, and he kind of played it safe. He set an army in the middle, got like, I don't know, like six wraiths, started raiding some overlords, like not doing damages to the expansions, but just you know, wrecking up the overlords, etc. But like the example of up magic that you mentioned is like a perfect example of how to like not do it, I guess.
Yeah, I would make a slight adjustment to what you said about that mid game damage. I think it's dangerous to say you need to do damage in that middle period, because really you need to prevent, or you need to do some damage in order to delay the Terran's mid game push. That's why people do Mutilus harassment. That's why people burrow lurkers outside the Terran's base, is because it delays that inevitable mid game push. But if your opponent is going Wraiths, your opponent already has chosen to delay his mid-game push, so it becomes more okay for you not to be as aggressive as Zerg. So in my eyes, the fact that he didn't move out and wasn't aggressive balances things back out a bit. I wouldn't think of it so much as like a detriment to Zerg that he wasn't able to do that. And that, I think, is a really...
So if you say that balances it out, could it be the damage that the Wraiths do that tipped that balance, because he killed 18 drones?
Exactly. Like, and that's the thing, is that whenever you choose to do these sorts of like really early pushes in Terran vs. Protoss, or one of these fancy Wraith actions in this case, you're gonna get in your opponent's face, and then he won't be able to move out, and so your push is delayed. So now we're kind of at ground zero, but maybe you're at a slight disadvantage just because you've gone Wraith. So you need to do a lot of damage in order to swing it back in your favor. So I think that in that game, Fantasy did a really good job of harassing all over the place. And also the fact that it's sort of this weird vertical line that you have to defend as Zerg, and the Wraiths can maneuver back and forth along that really, really easily.
Yeah.
So I think that immediately gives a bunch of map control to the Terran. But I don't think that just by virtue of not being able to attack, the Zerg was somehow at a disadvantage.
Okay, and like we were talking about viability, and Idra said that he would, like, in any situation, rather have science vessels. So is that something that you would say, like, lower level players, like, don't do this, just get your vessels? Or is it so viable that even lower level players could do this?
Well, it depends on how you're defining viable. I mean, for instance, what Idra's saying, relating back to what I was saying earlier, is Idra's saying, I'm not going to put myself in some situation where I have to do extra damage with these units and I sacrifice something else. I would rather just have it be totally normal and just do attack. That's a really shitty explanation. Let me try it again. So, like, let's say we're playing Protoss Reserve. A question is, should I make a whole bunch of units and put them in shuttles and do some harassment? Or should I not do that and I just have a bigger army anyways? That's basically what Idra's saying. He's saying, why should I go Wraiths and do this sort of stuff if I could just get a whole bunch of science vessels and be at the point I'm going to be at anyways? Because with Wraiths are like a detour. It's like, I'm going to go Wraiths for a little while, and then eventually I'll go into the normal sort of stuff. And I don't really have an issue so much doing either one. Really, I'm comfortable with any player at any level trying to do whatever they want.
Tip that balance for Fancy. What made him decide to go with Wraiths instead of earlier vessels?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the distance is pretty... it's like a...
I'm going to
use the word long, even though the map is like distance wise, it's you know, like, it's still 128 by 96, I think, is the size of the map, so it's pretty narrow crossways, but because of the fact that the way that the Zerg has to move through the middle of the map makes it feel a little bit longer. I mean, he has to go up onto his high ground pod, and then down onto this middle ground, and then down onto the lower ground, and then up onto the middle ground, and up onto this high ground pod, and then all the way around. It ends up feeling very long, and as a result, that's where you buy time to get those extra science vessels, is the fact that you can delay with Medic Marine and Wraiths for so long that, that's what makes it okay. If you were playing on a map where you were a lot closer, for some reason I'm failing to think of one that have really close start positions.
Raid Assault?
Raid Assault's a fucking insane map. I love that map. Well, let's just take something like Tornado. Let's say, you know, you're at the right position, your opponent's at the bottom position, and you can sort of just slowly waltz your way over there. Might be a little bit harder to do. But, you know, that I don't know if that's the best example of Tornado, but imagine this imaginary map where you're in close positions and you wouldn't want to go Wraiths. Because those push distances are so short.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I once said about Matchpoint that whereas rush distances are pretty short, push distances are pretty long because of the kind of N shape, but you can take a middle path. So that's good for a couple of units because you have to go over the ramps and shit. So your units are in more danger of, you know, you cannot push up the ramps and stuff, but you can push the long way. That's pretty long.
Well, I actually love the way you put that, the rush distances are short and the push distances are long. That's actually, I'm stealing that. That's great.
No, that's exactly what. Yeah, because if you watch, when we watched the early Protoss versus Terran, the map test games, the Terran would either go for fake double or a double and just rush through the middle and it would be successful, or if he'd set up for a longer game, he would go, you know, if he starts top right, you would go down right first, then take the platform, then push across the middle to the platform on the other side, and then push down onto the Protoss, you know. So that's I think that's true about that map, let's just put it like that. So let's go to our this kind of use of race in TVT. Do you think it's a thing to do in TVT?
You know, it's weird because I've playing my first WCG was in 2001, and I even played semi-seriously before then. I mean, I was fucking bad. Don't get me wrong, I was awful. But I mean, I've been aware of the trends in a lot of the pros for a really long time, and Wraiths used to be what you did in Terran versus Terran, and people even have had trouble shying away from that until maybe in the last 3-4 years, people have gotten a few less Wraiths, and they only end up using Wraiths in the ultra early game, if they go for, you know, one tank, one starport type plays, or if they go for a fast two-port Wraith. So it seems fine to me to use it in the ways that C ends up using it. I'll always say that if you end up going Wraiths, make sure it's not because you're convinced that your opponent is not expecting it. Force him to not expect it, or force him in a situation where Wraiths would be useful anyways. So the classic example is, you know, you get a handful of Wraiths. What's a good example of this? Did you watch MVP versus Notice on Fighting Spirit?
Probably, I can't remember it. I remember what I do remember is Dark Elf versus Light and Ruby versus Sky, where you had the huge Wraith switch is late game where he just would put down 10 starports.
Those are
that was common in the old days, so I was
just to briefly summarize, there's this nice technique that MVP makes use of, which is, and this I think is extremely advanced. You open up with two starport Wraith, just one base two starport Wraith is Terran, against Terran, obviously. You make two Wraiths, but then you don't make any more Wraiths. you just immediately start making more tanks and you start making more marines. And the idea is that your Terran opponent sees two wraiths come at him very quickly, so he knows that you went to starport, and it tricks him into thinking that you are going to keep making wraiths, but instead you just go ground and you push his expansion. So I'm going to briefly pause and just say, so there's the opening. How are wraiths useful in the mid game, the way that C is sort of using it? Well, you can get more wraiths to get a sight range advantage if you're pushing forward with tanks. And that's highly underrated. It's just a sight range advantage. The wraiths give you that in the mid game. You can do nice little tactics where you just force them to pull units back from certain locations and you can push in others. And I don't know, and sorry, I'm actually watching this game right now to see when he starts adding on more wraiths. I'm trying to scout. But I mean, well, like, so when he adds the points contained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he resumes the production at one point.
Yeah, and that's what was so cool about it, is he like did a little trick with wraiths, but then he used wraiths in the stable, normal fashion that I think C would have ended up using his wraiths in anyways. So for instance, if you just get like, I have six wraiths, kind of the way that C ends up doing it, your opponent suddenly has to get like a handful more Goliaths. So if you have been keeping equal with your opponent in tank numbers, or even maybe if you have slightly less tank numbers, you can start pushing forward really aggressively, because you can use the wraiths to kill your opponent's floating barracks, get, you know, that sight range advantage, and then your tanks start crushing your opponent's tanks. Yeah. And what's kind of ended up happening is that C has just gotten to walk into his opponent's base, and I remember it was against Sky High. He got like 22
the problem
kills
though is that it's so easy to watch that and say,
"Yeah,
that's
yeah, the enemy game was kind of ridiculous."
And I mean, I think it's more important to say, "Hey, if I go wraiths, I occasionally will get the opportunity to get 22 kills. It becomes a possibility, but that's not."
I wasn't really a fan of Sky High in that game.
Yeah, Sky High, fucking, he can suck it. I don't actually like Sky High too much as a player, because I've never noticed anything too particularly distinctive about him stylistically. He seems
he
to
made
play
like four
the
factories
same way
before armor.
Yeah, I don't mind.
And I was
that
like, do you want to? Well, I was like, do you want to get killed by Wraiths? Because I don't know. When I play TVT, I'm very, very scared of being like caught by a wraith with my pants down. Like, it's not something.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because it's so funny, because I mean, there was this trend, especially around 2004, 2005, when people realized that vultures were useful. I mean, before then, people actually just did not make vultures, and if someone made vultures, you'd be like, LOL, this guy sucks, you know? but you'd end up in 2004, 2005 with people being over obsessed with vultures, so they would get, like, only vultures for the whole game. It would never stop.
Okay.
And it was this really common transition to open up with a bunch of vultures and then throw down three starports. And then you'd win just by having all these wraiths. And what I like about that example is that kind of shows like how my opponent has forced himself to make all these vultures, and therefore I'm going to counteract that by getting these, you know, ninja surprise wraiths. And I think, for instance, if you do end up doing that, as you'll note, the way that C did that is I think both players... Actually, I'm going to open up that game. I think both players...
C, which game do you want to have the links? Let's not discuss C versus Sky High, because I don't think that's like a good example of a good TVT. Like,
oh, I think it's an example of all the right setups by C,
okay.
And then he just happened to kill off 22 wraiths. I mean, I'm going to ignore the after 22 SCV kills point, but I mean, both players open up with the expansion, and then we have the all those factories being added on by Sky High. Yeah, Sky High was making a bunch of vultures, and I love the way that C responded. He walls off his front, and he starts going tanks. A lot of people will start going tanks as they start going wraiths, because they know, well, hey, I can't keep producing vultures, because I'll just get behind in the vulture battle, and that'll be it. But then they still get overrun when they go for tanks to have that more muscular army. But I love the fact that C actually walls his front off. And that's actually what set him up in order to like do some push later if he couldn't do anything with his wraiths. He was just in a really nice, tight, locked position.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is pretty
cool. Yeah, you see that on... I'm watching it as well. I'm trying to, like, skipping through it. I think like this is what I do in like TVT on Destination when people go like, because you're right, like the trend of people going like filters like en masse is kind of coming back, and what you can do is put a put like a tank and an SUV to block those bridges, and then, you know, when you wall off, they're so much more inefficient.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like how he does that.
So that was a totally awesome like, example.
It's like he keeps adding factories, but he doesn't have an armory, and it's building. Like, I'm at the 9.5 minutes mark, and he can't do anything with the filters. Yeah.
Let's ask all three questions right now, just so I know what we're dealing with, so that way I can budget my talking a little bit better.
Okay. So the first thing, or the third thing, I guess, is mass dropships in matchups that aren't TVT. So we're mainly looking at Flesh versus Hyun on Tornado and Abmagic versus Free on Outsider. That's the third point. Fourth point is nukes.
Yep.
So like, well, we know what that are, what those are, and English. And the fifth point is kind of a bonus, and it's the offensive EMP that Flash did versus Best on Fighting Spirit.
Yeah. All right. Sweet. So I will address these in order. So mass dropship play.
Okay.
My response to mass dropship play is almost the same as my Wraith comment, which is that, and this especially applies to the Free vs. Up Magic game, and that's that the cost of getting all those dropships and trying to do damage with them has to be like pretty significant. Because I mean, in that Up Magic vs. Free game, Free basically just held on. And then once he, you know, repelled the dropship attacks for a reasonably long amount of time, he just won, and it wasn't even really that close. I mean, it was a little sticky when he was, you know, in danger of losing his main, but especially in Terran vs. Protoss, if you want to do dropship stuff, you got to make sure that you're doing quite a bit of damage with it. That's why a lot of players who do this, who want to be super aggressive with dropships, just stick to two, because that's enough that, you know, if you lose them or if it fails, it's not horrific, but it can do quite a bit of damage.
But one thing about that game, I think, is that if you watch the VOD from like the and you can see both perspectives, that I think it had much more potential than the actual damage that it did.
Yeah, I mean, like these sorts of plays have tons of potential to do some stuff, especially against Protoss, because they don't really have any good anti-air. I mean, Zerg has Mutas and Scourge, so it gets a little bit harder. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think it can be really, really, it can be really, really fun to do. I recommend it. It's a nice thing to try every once in a while. But in Terran vs. Zerg, you kind of have to force an opportunity to use it. So I think there's a great example where if you've cut your opponent off from walking through the middle. So for instance, on Eye of the Storm, if your opponent has like the bottom left and the bottom right, and you somehow get in the bottom middle, then dropships become really helpful because you have a path for the dropships. In the Hyun vs. Flash game, Flash had all these dropships readily available in order to, he had these drop paths readily available for all these dropships. And that ended up giving him a huge benefit in terms of doing the drops. Another great example of this is Calm versus Iris on Neo Harmony, where Calm starts at the top right and Iris starts at the bottom left. Iris moved out really aggressively into the middle and then went for dropship and started really pounding Zerg apart. Another great example of this is Iris against Gigi play on, what's that map? It's the one, I think the map's called Fantasy. It's the one where there's like one different starting position. There's one for
is that Fantasy? There's Fantasy there? And Fantasy 2. And
yeah, it was on Fantasy.
I reckon it's the latter?
Iris was doing this insane job of just bashing, GG play apart. And then the huge amount of dropships was just sort of the the finishing blow. He just set himself up in a really good position. I would say, though, like, if you're in a really dangerous spot where you're, like, really far back and the Zerg's pushing forward with swarms and you don't really have that good a control over the middle, I wouldn't recommend suddenly getting, like, 5 dropships and going, oh, these will help save the day. Lots of dropships are just an extension of that heavy mid-game pressure. I really like those quite a bit.
Okay, so, like, basically what you're saying, viability-wise, is, like, you can use them if you're equal or ahead, but not, like, it's not a comeback move or anything.
I even don't like use of the word equal. It just has a lot to do with the center control of it. I mean, you could be losing, but have center control, and then you can use dropships to great effect to just, you know, smash your opponent apart. Those are some of the, you know, the classic comeback wins. But the danger, anytime you don't have center control and don't have control over the paths you want your dropships to fly over, if you have 4 dropships and you just lose them all to Scourge or something stupid, that can just be quite a crushing blow.
Okay. Well, that's that. Let's move on to nukes, I guess.
Nukes, good. Really good. Like the nukes. The nukes are a lot better in the late game, because, again, pretend we're being a super aggressive Terran, as we should be, and we're smashing our opponent apart, and our opponent has more than 2 gas. He has some other expansions, but we just can't break it because he has a lot of swarms that he's throwing down. Here's a situation that every Terran player has encountered. He runs up with a huge army. There's like 5 lurkers, and or even less than that, like maybe 3 or 4 lurkers and some sunken colonies. And he has 1 defiler, and we're about to go kill him, and then that defiler casts a dark swarm right before it dies from irradiate. So we can't break this expansion, but this Zerg player can't necessarily push forward and do anything to our Marines because he doesn't have any defilers out yet. That is an ideal spot for nuke, because it's really the best way to break a Zerg's defense late game. Or I should say, in the late mid-game. In the late game, Zerg will have a lot of Ultralisks and Zerglings and a lot more mobility, and it's going to be more difficult to use nukes to any effect. Boxers use
isn't
nukes...
using... Oh.
Oh, go ahead.
Like,
go
isn't
ahead.
Using a nuke in the late mid-game, isn't that, like, pretty situational? Isn't it, like, you need to... Like, the situation in which you use it has to meet certain conditions, whereas in a late game... the game's much more open, and you can just send a nuke or a ghost/nuke to wherever you see fit.
I don't. For instance,
I don't know
let me just make sure I'm on the same page. It sounds like you're saying. It seems like that's such a specific circumstance to use nukes. Why are we doing that? We would invest all this money, and then that might never even come up. Are we fucked in that case?
Yeah. Like, the way I heard it was, like, you need to have a ghost in place and a nuke ready as soon as his last defiler dies right after casting a swarm defending his expansion that we
I guess I worded, like, that a little bit weirdly. I mean, basically what I'm saying is there are actually many situations where you can't break Zerg, but Zerg cannot do anything about your huge army in the center. Or actually, your huge army anywhere. And in those positions, it's impossible to break Zerg's defense unless you have a nuke. A nuke is like a big key to doing that. So that's my opinion, actually, on late game nukes, is that they're quite awesome.
Do you think that's, like, viable for even lower levels?
I mean, I almost always say, yeah, it's viable for lower levels, but, I mean, it's really hard. You can get away with not doing it.
You're so cool. Like, every time I bring up nukes, like, anywhere to anyone, they're always like, no, you need the gas for vessels, or no, you need the supply for more army. But,
you know, I actually want to address that gas for vessels idea, because a lot of people just think that you need to do constant vessel production. Oh, God, what's in my throat? Oh, Jesus.
Oh. Don't die on me, man.
Yeah, I know. It's like, there's one last thing I want to say about vessels, and I just, like, drop it on the other end of the fucking mic, and no one ever knows. Like, he always had things to say about vessels.
Oh my god.
But,
okay. Take your time.
What was I going to say? Oh yeah, you don't actually need more than 7 or 8 vessels. worth of energy. It's kind of like the Protoss player who says, oh, you need gas for Storm, which is true for, you know, a big portion of the game, but there comes a point where you don't want, like, 18 Templar because you can get, like, 80 Storms. Like, that's not the whole purpose. So especially when the Terran player starts getting, like, a third gas or a third base, so you have another command center to get that nuke, that's an ideal spot to do it. I mean, even look at the Boxer versus Killer game. Boxer ended up getting nukes after he got his third. It kind of times itself, you know. You can't get a nuke until you have a third base, and that also ends up being the circumstance in which you'd really need the nuke. But I mean, let's imagine for a minute that we've taken this third base and we have a third gas. What are we going to do? Add another starport and suddenly get like five starport vessels? That's stupid. No one's going to do that. What a lot of players end up doing is they end up going back to tanks. They end up getting two more factories and they start getting a massive amount of tanks, massive amount of vessels, and medic marine, and they end up with this boom army. And it seems entirely reasonable to me that someone could get nukes instead. The Boxer versus Killer game, I don't know if that's the best example of nukes, because it's kind of like, oh, look, I have an opening to nuke.
It was kind of to tough it off. But,
yeah.
I think Fantasy versus Hoja was a better example. Because Fantasy he denied that fourth gas with, like, without even doing anything. I think that's, like, an important feature of match point. That you can nuke
such
the
significant thing.
And like, let's talk about nukes versus Protoss, because Nexus you can kill with one EMP and one nuke, so it's even less of an investment to do that. And Lita did it versus Pure on Heartbreak Ridge, where he had this kind of safe spot really near his base, and it wasn't Heartbreak Ridge, and he found this like really cute spot near space, which was like really safe, and he could one hit kill the Nexus. So is that like a map feature that I've been talking so fast, I have two things to talk about now. So let's discuss nukes versus Protoss, and then
I briefly want to stop and do nukes against against Zerg still a little bit. Like, a great example of nuke use not in the late game is an old game. I hope I get this right. It was Cassie against CG. I think that JY is how you spell it. I know it was Cassie on Troy. And Troy, as you know, is that really obnoxious desert map with this fucking stupid, like, kill the assimilators at your choke to wall yourself in.
Yeah, I know the map.
I know it was some Zerg player who was, like, on the verge of retirement, so I think that was, like, his last game and he got nuked. But this is what Cassie did. He went one base, he opened up with two barracks, and just went Medic Marine, slowly massing a Medic Marine army and tech straight to Vessel, and then went straight for nukes. And he didn't even get cloaking for the Ghost when he got the nukes, because this is what he did. The way the Zerg normally ends up playing on Troy, and just in a lot of games in general, is they open up with three hatch Mutalisks, and then they use Lurkers to defend for a while, and then they, you know, do whatever. And so because Cassie one-based, he was able to get these vessels very quickly, he was able to get these nukes very quickly. So when he waltzes over to his opponent's base with just a whole bunch of Medic Marine and a vessel, maybe two vessels, and he gets to his opponent's front, there's nothing but a bunch of Lurkers and a bunch of Sunken Colonies. That's impossible to break unless you have a nuke. So Cassie just nukes it and walks right into G's natural and almost fucking wins the game right there. It was so cool to watch, because it was just like, my god, I see exactly what he's doing. He's getting this complete control over the mid game by going one base and getting Medic Marines, so the Mutalists aren't able to do too much. Then, all of a sudden, he's going for nukes in order to break this Lurkers, or this Lurker line, and it worked perfectly. I mean, he killed all the Sunks. He killed, like, six Sunks and, like, a handful of Lurkers. I mean, the Lurkers got moved in time, but after the nuke landed, all the Marines stimmed in and were able to shoot in range of the hatchery. So that was, like, an unbelievably cool thing to witness. So in regards to some of your other questions, I think there, I mean, map features you can use nukes to abuse. I mean, I know Boxer did that on Longinus in a Terran vs. Protoss. He actually landed the Ghost in the cracks Hind the expansion so he could nuke it with complete and total safety, which I believe is also what Leda did against Pure.
Yeah, somewhat. I think, I'm not sure about the long and the spot, but there's a spot on Hardwick Ridge, and there's one on Fighting Spirit as well, like right right behind the wall around the around the natural. You can put a ghost there. Anyway, some cute kind of spot for a ghost where you're in range of the natural.
Yeah. And that sort of stuff's, like, always good. And again, I mean, you kind of need to just make sure you time it properly. To just make sure you, what the fuck am I talking about? Yeah, to just make sure you don't rush for nukes and just like, aha, I killed the spot because I can, yeah. And then you just lose the game because you don't have any units.
Yeah, that's not a good thing, I think. Like, if he's on, I don't know, say you're on... Yeah, let's not get into the intricacies of builds. But so, like, base conclusion is, you're in the late game, you have a ton of money, you have a ton of gas, you don't want to get, like... Some people go battle cruises, I guess, or, like, if you're losing your army, you need to replenish, and you're still spending your money. But as soon as you get, like, a surplus, you can invest that in nukes, you'd say.
What matchup are we talking about right now?
Well, I guess both, because
Which both?
Terran versus Protoss and Terran versus Zerg.
Oh, okay. Actually, to be honest, I think Terran versus Terran is the matchup where nukes are going to be most effective. I mean, that's one of those situations where, like, so many times I'm watching the game and go, man, that guy needs to get nukes here in order to, like, break that line. Because, you know, if you're in a situation in Terran versus Terran where you have two tank lines, and you can't advance because he has too many tanks, and you don't have battlecruisers, if you just get nukes, it's just like, bam, you get a hole. You just claim a hole. Like, I mean, I think the best example of someone just needing to get some fucking nukes is if you watch the epic Flash vs. Firebat Hero game on Medusa.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, at the north position, Flash brilliantly just sieges up a bunch of tanks behind a mineral line and slowly inches his way forward over the course of 20 minutes in order to take that expansion. Or, yeah. You know, in a more exaggerated sense, you know, he was just preventing his opponent from taking that expansion. And if Firebat here had just gotten a nuke and just nuked that, there would have been absolutely nothing that Firebat or that Flash could have done about it. I mean, because you can end up planting the nuke outside of range of the tanks, so you can't get hit.
So I think Terran versus Terran is the matchup where you definitely end up having enough money for it.
Yes.
So why isn't it used more? So why do you think that, you know?
I mean, I'm trying to think of an incredibly reasonable explanation for why it's not used more, and I fail to do that a lot. I mean, I think part of it is that, like, you just kind of get caught up in the moment, I want to say. I mean, you end up with all these, you know, you're doing vultures and tanks early on. And then you're, like, positioning all these tanks properly. And also, I think part of it is that, like, okay, so here's a more reasonable explanation. Especially in the early mid-game, which in Terran is, like, you know, like 20 minutes into it. But in the early mid-game, when, you end up in these situations where you have, like, some tanks in key positions, but for the most part, no one really has secured that much of the map, and they both have dropships running around everywhere. Ghosts don't function well unless there's a sort of lack of mobility, unless you can't break something. So, for instance, when we have big tank lines at the end, yeah, now we're talking about a really ideal spot to start getting nukes. But if we're in a situation where I just have five tanks sieged outside my front, five tanks sieged over here, and the rest of my army's in a bunch of dropships, I just don't see the purpose of nukes. I mean, what are you going to nuke? Are you going to nuke those five tanks that are hanging out? Well, they'll unsiege, they'll back up, and then they'll siege up again. And what would be the purpose of getting that extra little bit of land at that stage? Probably not too much. But definitely in the later stages of the mid-game, when there starts being those more established tank lines and those positions become much more entrenched, getting nukes is critical.
Okay, so let's just hope that, you know, with this kind of, I don't know, like this kind of uprise, or like, I don't know how to call it, this like kind of new wave of nukes coming in, that we'll see some in TVT. Let's hope that happens.
Yeah, hope to go.
Yes. Okay, so last point, the offensive EMP, Flesh versus Best, your opinion on that.
Okay, well, I also briefly want to talk about Terran versus Protoss and nukes, because I kind of forgot to do that.
Oh, okay, let's go back to that.
It'll be really fast, too. Terran versus Protoss, I think that Ghosts and nukes kind of flow most reasonably well from a strategy perspective, because you're going to have the science vessel anyways. If you get the Ghosts, you can use it to lock down shuttles with Templar. You can use it to lock down the Arbiters. Has a whole lot of really nice uses just for the lockdown aspect. And then if you can get nukes in the late game, I mean, again, all that sort of incorporates well. In Zerg vs. Terran, it's sort of like, you know, oh, I'm just going to get a nuke, you know, like... Or actually, Terran vs. Terran is probably the most awkward. It's like, okay, I got to find my barracks, I got to land my barracks, I got to find the command center, I got to build a nuke, and then I'm going to start
going. I know
ghosts.
That. That's like,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, I mean, it's like, where the fuck is my barracks? Like, I want to make a ghost, but I cannot find my barracks. This matchup is so stupid. So, I like, but as a result, like, in Terran vs. Protoss, because, you know, you're using a lot of gas in that matchup, it's important you do make use out of that ghost. So, I think we saw C really... from Estro on, what the fuck is that map? Shades of Twilight against someone. I think it may have been Jongbi, maybe not, but it was definitely really who was
Reach.
Playing. Oh, that was the game, yeah. And he ended up getting, ended up lockdowning all the shuttles. And I was just like, whoa, that's really cute. And then I was kind of like, huh. And if you got nukes, that would flow really nicely with that. So just to bring that up.
Yeah, I don't know how he did that. Like, that was insane. He got them all, and he did it again versus Gwemchi on Neo Medusa. Like, the Arbiter flies in, and he's like, locked down. And I'm like, holy shit! Like, because it's, I don't know. Like, I don't even know how to like even EMPing an Arbiter at that exact point is really impressive. Like, if it just gets into your like vision range, but then lockdowning is even, I don't know. They're both pretty good, so.
Okay. Yeah, I dig it. I'm into it. but the last thing about that offensive EMP, I talked a little bit about that in the cast that I saw. That's like really high level, and in my eyes, you shouldn't be quote unquote incorporating offensive EMPs into your play, because almost certainly what Flash was. What was going through Flash's mind is Flash was saying, in my practice games, I end up with this push that loses if my opponent has an extra stasis, or let's say has a huge amount of problems with extra stasis. But in the games where my opponents do the exact same things but don't have that one Arbiter for stasis or for recall, I end up winning a lot higher percentage of the time. But what's probably going through Flash's mind is that he hit a point where when he was pushing in practice, he was saying, man, I really just cannot have an easy time pushing if my opponent gets that really early Arbiter. And that probably motivated him to do that weird push forward with the vessel. So it seemed very, very specific to his build. Obviously, you know, if you can get an EMP, go for it. But I think that was such an unbelievably specific situational thing. But what I love about it is that it shows a lot of creative thinking. It shows him saying, man, I really hate this stupid fucking Arbiter. How do I deal with it? And he just deals with it by walking his vessel halfway across the map and just waltzing over to the Arbiter and EMPing it. I mean, that's sort of, like, funny.
Like, that needs like exact timing, and this is like the one game in like half a year that Best doesn't go to base Arbiter, so I was kind of amazed that he got it, but I don't think it's viable just because of the very exact timing at which you need your vessel like in place.
Yeah. I I'm not blah. Jesus, where the fuck did my words go? Yeah, I'm not so sure I like the use of the word viable there, because it's obviously very viable. I mean, it clearly gave Flash a little bit of an edge in the push. But I don't know necessarily if it's useful in every circumstance. It's just very situational. Honestly, I would put it like this. Everything in StarCraft is viable. It is entirely possible to create a gameplay against Zerg that only involves starport units, you know? And making just Wraiths and Valkyries and Vessels the emphasis of your play. But it's really hard and really situational. You should be really careful on what maps you do it on.
Yeah, okay, well.
So those are my thoughts on that.
Okay, excellent. I think that's it. So,
Yeah. Awesome. I'm really glad we got to finish that thing out. That was awesome.
Yeah, I think I'll try to write it up in, like, less words. Do you mind if I make an MP3 and make that available for people who want to listen to the
entirety
of this interview? Okay, that would be cool, because if I have to proportionize this to what Idra said, then it's going to have a lot of cutting. I'll try to, like, keep it intact as much as possible, but, you know,
see.
I don't know. First time I do this, so, you know, we'll see. But anyway, thank you for doing this.
Good luck
with your show and, you know, your stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. Good luck with getting all that shit done in the next 3 days. Oh god.
Yeah. Wish me luck. Okay.
All right, see you. Hey, take it easy, man.
See you, man.